Alan Quinn Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 5, delivered on February 6, 2017. The title of this lecture is Time Value of Money.
Today, the time value of money. Before I get to that, I do need to finish up some discussion of financial statement analysis. I thought I had already put it up, opened it up. I've got a financial ratios worksheet or formula sheet in ReggieNet, but apparently I forgot to turn it on so you could see it, so I'll turn that on this evening. It's just the formulas for you to have at your handy disposal. Maybe have them laminated, put them up on the fridge or not. Okay, probably not. But we're getting into some of the meat and potatoes, the heart and soul of finance here, at least some aspects of the subject. Let me show you something, though, before I go any further. I'm going to take a... Really? That shouldn't be doing that. Bear with me one moment here. Okay. I'm going to pull up a screen here. It's your turn. Let's pull up something at random here. This is the financial screens on Yahoo Finance for the company called Target, or Target if you're up and coming. TGT is its trading symbol, and we're going to talk about it now. One thing I want to caution you is in the early time, I'm going to do my best to turn you into good thinkers, and at the same time, if I'm lucky, maybe even cynical bastards like I am. But if I, short of accomplishing that, I do want to warn you. A little knowledge can get you into a world of trouble in things like finance and combat. Years ago, my son informed me that he had played so much Doom that he was a far better soldier than I could ever be because he'd been on his game so much longer than I ever had in the real world. And that's sort of the idea I have from a lot of people who do gaming. They have no clue what it's like when you really do this for a living. So do know that. The knowing this gets you started, but this is no place for beginners to start. You could end up turning your entire savings into a three martini lunch for a guy on Wall Street. And they will just take your money and leave, just like some gypsy can steal your stuff from your camera bag and leave and you'll never see it again. Know that about this world. These are predators. They don't care about you. They'll take your money as fast as you can hand it to them. The speed with which you hand it to them is sort of a function of how stupid you are. But I want to make you smart. And part of that means that I'm going to hold you to account for what I said the last time. And I want you to tell me what you see here. First of all, ma'am, is this a safe or a risky stock? Risky. It is, in fact, a very safe stock. Why is this a very safe stock?
That's a great question.
That's a bad answer. Why is this a safe stock?
Let's see.
Got nothing? Talk to me. Madam, why is this a safe stock?
No.
This is an what is that show where they reach out for a lifeline? Okay, Ace. You see, the first time you hear something, when I'm talking, you are not going to be engaged. Look, I do that on purpose, okay? I'm making asses of you for a reason here. It's because the first time you don't see, you're over the damn, it's hot in this place. The thing is that when I show information, and this is true in your work life too, is when you're going to see information for the first time, it's going to go by you. It has to sink in. That's why I do this layering. I talk about the same thing over and over because I don't expect, if you did get it the first time, you're one of those friggin' rain men and you're not very interesting to be around any other time than when you're giving information. Look, your metric for risk is beta, okay? Beta measures the non-diversifiable risk of an asset relative to the market portfolio. Now, Target could be a risky stock on its own. Matter of fact, it is. That volatility is nasty on that. But in a well-diversified portfolio, this is a pussycat stock. It is 0.42. Remember I told you that 1.00 is the risk of the market. Of the market portfolio, that theoretical thing that would be all of the stocks of the world, each in its proportion in the portfolio to its contribution to the world economy, that thing. Well, this one is less than half of the volatility of the market portfolio, but only if you hold Target in a well-diversified portfolio. If you hold it on its own, it could be a monster. And the only risk for which you should be rewarded is the risk reflected there in that beta. All of that other risk that you could take with this stock or any stock, you are not going to get anything for it. We don't pay stupid, unless you're in the movie Jackass, okay? But in the world of finance, we don't have time to coddle you for your mistakes and your stupidity. You walk into a stock market, you buy stock, you are in the program. You're in the real life combat situation. It's no more reset and I get another life, or gee, maybe a mage will give me more life or anything like that. No, none of that happens here. I'm trying to be a little harsh here because it is just like that. That 0.42 tells you that this is a safe stock. Quite safe, in fact, matter of fact, but only in a well-diversified portfolio. Now, Target does have competitors. There is competitive risk in this, but apparently this stock isn't showing a lot of risk, even though it does have competitors. Now, if you think about it, though, Target has carved out a market for itself in a way. Let's try this. Could you name a competitor of Target, just off the top of your head? Walmart. Okay, but clearly Walmart isn't a competitor for Target. I mean, the people at Walmart. I mean, I go to Walmart. Okay, I almost got hit in the parking lot by a truck flying by. It had a bumper sticker on the back that said, "My wife, yes; my dog, maybe; my gun, never." Okay. You go through the parking lot. You have to park out in another county, and then you get there into the store, and someone from underneath you says, "Hi," and you realize, "Oh God, they're midgets in the greeting now." And you walk down the aisles, and there's some big person standing in the middle of the aisle talking to her, saying, "Honey, what do you want for dinner?" And finally, you get to the line, and it's 50 people long, and the person at the front is an elderly lady who is actually using her debit card for the first time. "Well, that didn't work. Swipe, swipe. Lady, I think that is your Social Security card." "Will you hurry up, get your food, go home and eat? You're not well. You won't live much longer. Please, eat." No, Target is upscale. It's upscale enough that when I walk in there, women pull their kids up close to them, okay? True story, bro. But the deal is that it really has carved out a place that's like a safe harbor for itself. There aren't a lot of stores that are that aim at the demographic profile that they aim at. So that's one of the good reasons it's safe. Another one is because it's big. Bigger is safer. As a general rule, and we'll talk about that more in a while. Okay, now there's other information here I do want to bring up before we go and look at some financial statements and ratios and all that. Okay, now this opened at 63.77. It looks like is it closed? Yeah, it's closed now. Market's closed. So it closed off its open. Are you really worried? Does this look like a terrible day for Target or not?
No,
exactly right. That's a minimal. You always look at the percents, never look at the numbers themselves. Okay, clearly it's the percents that you look at. And here, I mean, this is a half a percent. It's nothing to lose your water about. All that. Interesting, bid and ask. Okay, the day's range was very tight, 52-week range. Now, talk to me. Where is Target with respect to its 52-week price swing? Got to look at the screen for a second. Do you see it? Where is it? Very, very close to the bottom. I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to have you tell me, and then I'll tell you how dumb you are. No. Talk to me. Is that a bad sign or a good sign, or should you qualify and give me a little narrative?
Is it a good sign because it might go up soon?
It's testing its low, so that sort of tells me. I mean, Target's not going to go anywhere, and all that. So obviously, I might be concerned if this stock broke its neckline on the downstroke. You see what I mean? It's got a neckline down there. Not too far from here. If it crosses through that, I might get a little more excited than I am right now. But right now, it's testing its low. We'll see how it does from there for a while. Honestly, I'm not really concerned about that. So your analysis, as far as I'm concerned, I concur. Okay? So now, average volume. This is a little off its average volume, but it's pretty much really close. Now, in this kind of work, we don't worry about a few. It's like, it's a little bit down from its typical volume, but it's nothing that I'm going to be concerned about. It's slack volume, but the whole market was a little bit quiet today. There's kind of a feeling in the market. We had a major drop right after the election. Then we had a major surge upward. And now we're having, basically, we're seeing a drop. And this is a scarier drop because this is what is everyone's gotten sobered up. We aren't horrified by what happened. We're not elated that it was something not what we thought it was. And now the markets are beginning to get a better assessment. And the assessment is drop the prices. My concern is this. All stocks could be brought down in a hurricane. Don't fight a market. And why do I say that? I went to the internship fair. Did you go to the internship fair? Any of you? Were there lots and lots of internships being offered, companies stacked up against the walls, or was it an open room with a lot of tables empty? It was the second. That is a very bad sign. Okay? Get your degree and get your job. Okay. What does that market cap mean? What does it mean? Now, on an essay exam, I can ask you, I expect you to give me no more than two complete sentences when I ask you a question on an exam, in-class exam. Grammatically correct, complete sentences, spelling and punctuation, right. You're college students, I expect that out of you. You give me two sentences. If I say, what does a market cap mean? And you say, well, the market cap is the price per share times the number of shares outstanding. You're absolutely right, and you will get a zero for the credit for the problem. You understand? I don't give a rat's back end about the formula. You can go to your book or to some wiki site and get the formula. What I want to know is, what does it mean? So if you think you can get by with giving me a formula, you'll lose all the credit. Matter of fact, the only reason you would give me the formula is just so you could use it to explain. But other than that, I wanted you to tell me, what does market cap mean here? Any idea, any guess as to what it means? Madam?
The market's assessment of value to the owners.
You are reading right out of your notes, and you did a good job there. Give her a cookie. That's exactly right. It's essentially, when you say price per share times the number of shares outstanding, that's measuring the value of the equity, the value of the owner's position. And it's the market's value, not the accountant's value on those balance sheets and income statements. Those are irrelevant to me and to a market participant. We don't care. So if you're ever listening to some analyst on TV and he starts talking about book value or market to book or the book value of the stock, you just turn it off right there. There are a lot of better things to watch than that. Anyone who starts talking about book value as far as the value of a stock goes, you can just turn that off and turn on reruns of Jersey Shore and get more knowledge. Okay, now I'm going to give you one price earnings ratio, P/E ratio. Now, first thing, earnings, when I say earnings, that essentially means the net income. It's another word, although I've been told that some accounting teachers here have a slightly different meaning for earnings. In my world, earnings means net income. It's a fancier word. Now, the price to earnings ratio is the price per share divided by the earnings per share. Now, the earnings per share is the value that is remaining after the bills have been paid that belongs to the owners. Earnings belong to the owners. You've paid your bills for the current period. No wolves are going to beat on your door to collect. You've paid all your bills. So at the bottom line, net income represents the claim held by the shareholders. The claim held by the shareholders. Now, let me give you a simplified example of this. Suppose that you had 1,000 shares outstanding, and the company earned $2,000. That is the earnings, the net income. That means that that $2,000 belongs to the shareholders. It's theirs. They can get some of it back as dividends and some of it plowed back into the company. One way or the other, it belongs to them. Now, in a young company, you probably won't see dividends being paid because essentially, when you give dividends to your shareholders, you're admitting you don't have anything good to do with that money inside the company for them. If you put the money back in, it should grow the company, make their stock price go up. It's a balancing act. I told you about my story about these people who just bitch and bitch, you haven't given us a dividend. Well, that's because we're trying to put this money back in on your behalf. Well, it's our money, and it will be your money when we put it back in. It's your company. It belongs to you. Well, if it's my company, then I say, give me all your money. Okay, it's company's debt if we do that. So it's a balancing act. But anyway, regardless of that, $2,000 is there for the shareholders. That is their residual claim on cash flow. That is their residual claim. Okay, so now, the earnings per share in this case would be $2,000 total divided by 1,000 shares. So that would be $2 per share. That is each stock certificates, each share of stock, its claim individually. The $2,000 is the total claim that the shareholders have. The $2 is an individual. So if you owned like 10 shares, your claim would be $20. Okay, so now let me get down to the interesting part. price to earnings, P-E ratio. The price is what is determined by the market through supply and demand dynamics. Those who want the stock, who will buy it, push the price up. Those who want to dump the stock, who will sell it and push the price down. And at every minute, there's an equilibrium of supply and demand being formed. This is economics in the real life world. That equilibrium point you saw where the supply and demand curves cross, this is the place where the quantity being supplied to the market for of a share of a stock is cleared by the quantity being demanded for that stock. Okay, so let's say that the price is $10. The price per share for this stock is $10. What that is saying is that the market right now assesses that a current plug of $2 is worth $10 of investment. The market is willing, through the supply and demand framework, it has found an equilibrium for the time being, and it's always up and down, that says we will pay $10 right now for $2 of earnings right now. So the market's essentially saying that the price to earnings is $10 divided by $2, which is 5 times. We believe that those earnings the company will generate from $2 belonging to the shareholders, 5 times that much for the shareholders. Now, let me repeat that. The market is saying we hold right now that we will pay $10 now for the claim on $2 that the company has just earned for us. In other words, we believe that that $2 that belongs to each shareholder's share will, from the company's efforts, become 5 times that much money. What this means is that the price earnings ratio is actually a measure of risk. You understand that as that multiplier would go up, it would mean that investors are willing to pay more now for the same dollar of earnings later. So if I had a PE ratio of 20, that would mean that there is a belief that a dollar earned by the company for its shareholders now is going to be turned by that company into $20 for the shareholders. Now, you can't go too far with this. There is a range that is a comfortable range. But lower PE generally tends to mean that the investment community is more cautious. A higher PE tends to mean that the investment community believes that it's worth a bigger bet. Okay, that's basically what they are holding. Now, back in when I was in my early days, a PE ratio of 20 was considered pretty breathtaking. Now, that is really pretty normal. To give you an idea of how ridiculous price earnings ratios can get, we've seen price earnings ratios floating at 100, 200. On the Nikkei index in Japan, there were companies before the Tokyo Stock Exchange collapsed, there were companies with PE ratios of 20,000. So clearly it was just insane. And even now there's a little concern. But now look at the PE ratio of this cat. Is that 11.28? Yeah. That's actually a pretty safe one, too. It's consistent with the beta. Now, the interesting thing is when you see an inconsistency between beta and P-E ratio. But that P-E ratio, that's confirming that this is a relatively conservative investment. Hell, this one's almost a defensive investment. This is one I would go to if I was worried about stocks, because this thing is showing that its beta is low, so it doesn't whipsaw as much as the market does when it's in a good portfolio. And it also seems to have a P-E ratio that's not excessively large. In this case, this is saying that, and follow with me again, the market is willing to pay $11.28 right now to lay claim to a dollar of shareholder earnings right now. The market believes that a dollar at the bottom line, the company will turn into $11.28 through its operations. That's what it means. Now, interest, now I don't get that. The earnings date is, okay. Oh, I see what it is. I see. Wait, no. Okay, the dividend is $2.40. Now, that dividend yield is taking essentially the price of the dividend, $2.40, and dividing it by $63.42. In other words, it's like what you would get in a passbook savings account. If I put in $63.42, I will get interest, a dividend of 3.76% of that. That's actually a pretty generous dividend, and it's consistent, which is something we'll talk about later. But that's a pretty generous dividend. Now, you see that one-year target estimate? Okay, the one-year target estimate, just let me... I was trying to think. Okay, let me do this. I'll do it this way. Madam, I am a psychic. I am Madam Darkness, and I am going to tell your future. Okay? Now you're being awfully cynical looking at me. I don't think you believe me. Good. See that? Someone pulled out a crystal ball and said, in a year, it'll be $73. Okay? That person could have been a genius. That person could also have been doing blow before doing that. That person could have been a cat. In fact, I have a cat. I told you about my cat who actually does this kind of stuff on the internet and people believe him. The cat's name is Phineas. Phineas. You be careful, okay? Because he likes to mislead people and then sit back and eat cat snackies. You think I'm joking? I'll show you pictures of Phineas in action. It's scary. Okay, now, here's the deal. Don't believe them. You're going to be taught by the best professor that ever walked the earth. Okay? You are being. You can make an assessment on your own without paying the psychic hotline, which is what that is. Okay? You don't need to listen to that moron Kramer. You don't need to read the Wall Street Journal. You can do it yourself. Good. Now that we got that out of the way, let me do a little financial analysis for you here. Now we're going to go to www.sec.gov. Filings, company filings. Let me do target. Okay, I'm just going to do target. Oh, they got a Q out. Actually, their last K is, way back there. Where the heck is their last K? When did they do this filing? March. Ah, that's right. Their fiscal, companies have fiscal years that end all kinds of weird times. I mean, it just drives me crazy. I made sure that every company I ever made had a fiscal year that ended on the calendar year. There's a company, I can't remember which one it is, I show students. Their fiscal 2017 ended in January of 2017. They're now in their fiscal year 2018. What's that about? But anyway. Okay. I suppose we can look at this. You see, notice that this 10K is going to be old news, real old news. This thing has already been ground up. Within minutes, this thing was ground up for any information in it. But, you know, there you go. So we're going to go here and have a look. And the first thing I want to do is I want to take you on a journey. Well, I'm just going to do it online instead of pulling them down. Remember, you can always get these downloaded and then do whatever you want to them. But I'm going to just pull consolidated statements of operations. Okay, now, before anything else, you should always watch the trends, the growth patterns, and the changes in numbers. You see, this company obviously went from 71,279 to 72,618 to 73,785. But what I would really want to know is how much percentage change that meant. The numbers themselves are really not all that important. So if you haven't, it seems like it hasn't been emphasized to you enough in either the math or in other courses yet, but we do care about this. A percent change, and the symbol delta means change, is always the ending value minus the beginning value over the beginning value. Now I'm going to see if I can find my calculator that I've brought up here. Now I want the scientific. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to do this. I'm not going to do this for everything because it's with Excel, this is a lot easier to do than it is this way. But watch what I'm going to do here. I'm just going to take 72,618, open parenthesis, 72,618 minus 71,279. Is there some reason that sucks? You know, I was good there until you brought it up that I wasn't doing anything. Okay. 72,618. Yes, I do have these, but I always want to do this while you're watching. Now, 72,618 minus 71,279, close the parenthesis, divided by the 71,279. Growth rate of 1.88%. That's actually not all that spectacular. And that's sales. Their sales grew by only 1.88% last year. That was less than the growth rate of the entire economy, and it wasn't that much above the inflation rate. So I'm kind of concerned by that. But we move on. Let's look at what they did this year and see if things got a little better. So we would say 73,785 less 72,618, and then close the parentheses, divided by 72,618. Well, take that to the website thissucks.com. Slowing growth. Slowing. That is a problem. However, that might be compensated by factors down further. Now let's talk. I'm going to just take you through classic financial analysis with mentioning some of the ratios. The book has a lot of ratios. And I mean, when I was in this, I had a ton of ratios we looked at. One thing that's interesting is, remember last time I mentioned to you that a lot of companies don't report gross margin these days. That's your sales minus your cost of sales. In other words, this is how much money survived paying wholesale. Okay? This is essentially, well, now, their first ratio to bring up to you is to take your gross margin divided by your sales. Gross margin is the wrong word. It's gross profit. The margin is usually, and our book does it that way, and I do it that way, we would say the margin is actually the ratio of 14,485 to 71,279. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to take 14, I'm going to do the middle one, 14,767 divided by 72,618. What this tells me is that 20 cents of every dollar of sales survived wholesale. That's actually not very good, but I mean, it's all over the place. You can't just say, well, this is bad or this is good. You have to look at industry standards. You have to look at economic circumstances. But keep that one in mind, about 20.33 cents. So now let's see, 14,665 divided by 73,786. 73,785. Ow! See it? They actually slipped on this one too. That's not a good sign. I'm a little, although it's not a lot. I mean, it's just like, less than a penny, it looks like. But still, the amount of every dollar that survived, it's not that good. Now we work our way down the income statement. We work our way down, and I'll just take you down moving along. You got to look, first of all, understand the depreciation and amortization are not real expenses. They are, in fact, in technical terms, a crock. They don't exist. You don't write a check to depreciation. It doesn't exist. So, in other words, right now I'm not worried about depreciation, but I do want to look at how things are going along. You know, selling, general, and administrative expenses. I would want to know how this is behaving. It looks to me as if Target is trying its best to control this. Do you see how that's almost flat? That's good news. They're controlling an operating cost. At the same time, are they controlling it to the loss of good personnel? Sometimes these Wall Street boys are famous. They'll tell a company, look, if you fire 20% of your workforce, we'll jack the price of your stock up and you'll be a hero. Don't you want to go to the shareholders meeting and have everyone pat you on the ass? They will do that. All the time they do that. The president of Costco told them some years back, go to hell. Don't tell me to fire employees so that you'll buy my stock and you'll get everyone else to buy my stock. I don't work that way, but a lot of companies do. And this might be what Target's doing. It's cutting off its nose to make its masters happy. I don't know that, but don't just get excited because they are controlling costs. Now, going down here, operating margin. Earnings, well, this is actually a different one. Usually it's called operating income or earnings before interest and taxes. Here they call it something else. It's another way station where you say, all right, now we know how much of their of a dollar of earnings, if you take this number divided by the sales, you know how much of a dollar that they of sales survived wholesale and all of their other costs of operation. In this case, I could take that number for this year. Let me just do it. 5530 divided by 73,765 or 73,785, that is, actually. 73,785. 7.5 cents survived from the dollar that came to the cash drawer through wholesale, paying the wholesalers, and through paying everything from your wages and salaries to your light bills and your shipping and all that. 7.5 cents survived. That's getting a little scary right there. That's a little bit troublesome. Now, this is where I want you to be able to think for yourselves and to start making these kinds of judgments. Now, I'm not, again, we'd have to look at the industry standards, but knowing retail, this is beginning to concern me a little bit here. It's beginning to concern me a little bit. This is quite a narrow margin. Narrow, they had a narrow gross margin, a narrow operating margin. Now, they're earning, now their interest expense, one of your ratios that is crucial for you to look at is operating income divided by the interest expense. You see, you've got your operating income, and from that you have to pay your interest expense. We call this one times interest earned. It is your operating income, or EBIT, remember. Or these guys call it something else entirely, EBIT, divided by your interest expense. And what this does is it tells you how many times over you can pay your interest. If you don't pay your interest, you're out of business. If the times interest earned goes below one, there wasn't enough money to pay your debt holders their interest payment. And if that happens, do you remember what I told you the debt holders will do to you if you don't pay them? They will shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your mother wear furry costumes. They are that cruel. They will just shut you down. So if you ever see that go below one, you've got a problem. Does that mean the bigger it is, the better? No. A times interest earned that's too high means that this company isn't borrowing money that it could use to help its operations. One of the most important resources for any good company, one of the secrets of making money for your owners, of making money for yourself, is OPM. Now, do you know what OPM is? What have they been teaching you in business so far? And it sounds like I am joking you, but I guarantee you I am not. OPM is other people's money. Other people's money is what causes you to leverage for your owners. You don't borrow money for the sake of making lenders happy. You borrow money to magnify the punch of your own money. It is a force multiplier. Because if you borrow money, you pay back a fixed amount, the face value and the fixed interest expense. But there is no fixed on what can be done with that money. So in other words, if I borrow money at 8%, as long as I can earn more than 8% on that money, I gain from borrowing it. The lenders still get 8%, but if I get 20%, I keep the change. If I make 40%, I keep the change. That's why OPM is so important. That's why if I have a times interest earned that is too high, that means that they're not borrowing money. They're not paying interest payments that could possibly magnify the force of their own actions for their shareholders' benefits. In this case, if I look at that times interest earned, 5530 over 607, that's 9.11. Again, you have to look at the industry. In my judgment, I would say that's a little on the high side. But that might just be, I might be wrong about that. I have to look more carefully. But at 9.11, they can pay their every dollar of interest, they can pay nine times over with the money at the line above it. Nine times over. That's pretty good. That's great. But at the same time, if they borrowed more money, they could multiply the force of the money that they're making at the bottom line. One more here on this one is simply the your net income. You simply divide the net margin is your earnings per share, your earnings, total earnings, divided by your sales. In other words, how much of every dollar survived to become the property of the owners? How much of every dollar of sales survived to become the property of the owners, the shareholders? See, net earnings, that belongs to the shareholders. They can get it in dividends and or plow back into the company. But one way or the other, that's what this measures. So I would look at the last one here. Actually, let me look at two real quick here. 11th, what do you see for fiscal 2015? Yeah. You don't even measure it. If it's negative, you don't do it. I mean, it really has no meaning. Okay, so now we can look at this one. 3363. Divided by 73,785. A little more than 4.5 cents of every dollar that went into the cash registers came out belonging to the shareholders. That's what it means. And this number is all over the place. In some businesses, the net margin, net income divided by sales, can be 20, 30, 40%. In other businesses, it can be less than a penny. In fact, historically, in oil companies, those big monster oil companies, their net margin was less than a penny. But because they made insane billions of dollars, that meant that they made a lot of money for the shareholders. A net margin can be, God, there are a lot of things. In my company, I'll give you an idea. The net margin in my company, from my best estimate, is about 12%. About 12%. So, but I mean, I know people who have very low capital businesses, very low capital. Most of their costs are variable costs, and they run on a shoestring budget. I mean, they're pulling net margins 35%, 40%. Others, their net margins are down in the toilet. When I was a consultant, I saw some companies that had net margins that were over 90%. They were mostly certain types of, not illegal, but illicit types of companies tend to have very high net margins, because, well, anyway, I won't get into that now, mainly because I don't want to get in trouble saying things. Okay, now let me get to quickly to the balance sheet. Just mention a couple of things here, and you can read about it in the book more. I'm focusing on the ones that matter to me. Now remember that your assets plus assets are your liabilities plus your owner's equity. This is a dry lecture, I know that, but couple of things. Liquidity ratios are very important. In other words, the ones where I'd say, for example, the current ratio is your current assets right here, 14,130, divided by your current liabilities, 12,622. So 14,130, where did I put that? 14,130 divided by I was looking right at it. $12,622. 1.12. In other words, they can pay their current bills with their liquid assets just a little more than one time. That's what this is, by the way. The units of measure here is factor. It's a factor. It's times. That's actually very thin. I mean, sometimes you'll see companies with high current ratio, sometimes lower. Now, the next one that I would do, probably, I would do the same thing again, but instead of using the current assets, 14,130, I would take away their inventory, because you can't really liquidate inventory worth anything at all if you needed money right away. So in this case, what I would do is I would take the 14,130 minus the inventory, 8601, and then I would divide that by the current liabilities, 12,622. Ow, that's getting a little scary. I mean, and then the final one is like the zombie apocalypse. It says, look, if you had to pay your bills, your current bills, right now, what would you have? How much of those would you be able to pay? In other words, I would just take, for this last one, I would just take my cash, 4046, divided by 12,622, about 32 cents of every dollar of current bills you could pay with just the cash on hand. By the way, this last one is called, the book calls it the cash ratio. Back in my time, we called it the burn ratio. Now, the only reason I bring up these historical fossils is because you might be in a situation where you're working with older, more seasoned people who have an older terminology. So I bring it up. The book calls it the cash ratio, this last one, just cash divided by current liabilities. But it's also, in some cases, called, in my day, it was called the burn ratio. Now, just a couple more, just to make sure that you know some of the heavies along the way. And there are lots. Like, for example, the two biggies that are really interesting are return on assets, ROA, and return on equity, ROE. Now, by the way, I wanted to show you this. Do I have it? Oh, I want to show you this. All this stuff that I'm doing here is on this financial ratios sheet. That's on. Like I said, I thought I opened it on ReggieNet so you could see it, but I'll have to open it up tonight. But you can see all of these are there, so don't sweat it. I mean, you could even make this into one of those little pocket things and you could carry it in your wallet for the rest of your life to really make people think you were cool. Okay, the hell with you. But you can see all of these there. But I do want to bring up these two. Net income, ROA is net income divided by total assets. And ROE is your net income divided by your owner's equity. Now, I caution you that these, the bigger they are, the better, unless they're not. You see, what I can do, especially with ROA, you notice that if I can make the denominator go down, your return on assets goes up. If I can make it's so that I don't replace equipment, I just work it to death, my net income keeps going up, and my total assets go down through depreciation and real, not just accounting, but through real depreciation. We have seen examples of this in the real world, where companies had ROAs that were spectacular, growing year over year. But it turned out that those companies we're in terrible shape. The best example I can give you is the refinery industry. No new refineries were built in the United States from the 1970s. None. They just kept using the ones we had down in the Gulf, down there. Just keep working those assets, so the total assets depreciated both in accounting and in economic terms, until these numbers in the denominator were minimal. And net income on refined hydrocarbon products, distillates and gasolines and all that, was going through the roof. ROA looked spectacular. And then the refinery started exploding in the early 21st century, killing many, many workers, causing entire towns to have to be evacuated, wiping out coastal waters where people made their living. So that's what you can have. Don't just think an ROA going up is a good thing. You could be beating the hell out of your employees, not hiring new employees, not doing training, not doing proper maintenance of your workforce. And your total assets would be depreciating over time. Your net income, if you scare the hell out of them enough, you can drive your ROA up through the roof. Net income goes up. Yeah, we're working with fewer people, and we're teaching them how to work harder. By God, that's a good way. Until it isn't. Because sooner or later, you will pay the piper, and your company will buckle. So keep that in mind, that sometimes it's not the best way. Those were the ones that I wanted to really make a big fuss about, because you got to appreciate that sometimes there's no such thing as a perfect financial ratio. It has to do with, first of all, the industry, and it also has to do, let me turn this on for a minute, these lights. It has to do with other factors as well. But that's your introduction to financial ratios. Now, the other thing that I wanted to bring up today is the time value of money. Because you understand with what we're talking about here, one of the things that I brought up here was something that includes time value of money. I could give you a dollar now. I got a better deal. I could give you a dollar now, or I could give you a dollar in a year. Which?
Next year.
You want the dollar next year instead of the dollar now? Why? There wouldn't be really much reason. You can have it now and buy a friend tonight, or wait for a year when you're older and you don't look as good, and that dollar might not buy you a friend. You see, normally, we consider money in the future worth less than money now, simply because you give up immediate consumption. You also, if you take the money in the future, you are bearing risk that you won't get it in the future. I might be dead in a year. Matter of fact, there are people who are promising me I will. So the danger, the risk is that you might not see a dollar in a year. Now, you see, we have a little formula for this. The future value is equal to the present value times 1 plus the interest rate to the nth power. I would caution you, FV is the future value. PV is the present value. The R is actually the periodic rate. And the N is the number of periods. Almost always, interest rates are stated in years, in annual. So if I were to tell you that the compounding was semi-annual, You would have to take the annual rate and divide it into two periods a year. And you would have to multiply the number of years by two to count the number of periods. So in other words, the R is the periodic interest rate. And the N is the number of periods. So, you invest $20,000 in an account that pays 12% interest compounded quarterly. How much would you have after 10 years? Well, you would say, well, that future value would be $20,000 times 1 plus 0.12 over 4 to the 10 times 4. That 0.12 divided by 4 is the interest for every quarter. And the 10 times 4 is the number of periods, number of quarters in 10 years. Now, just to make sure, if I say semi-annual, the number would be 2. If I say quarterly, the number would be 4. Now you might be thinking, why is he trifling? Monthly would be 12. Now I did, back when, before I used online assessments, this was more than a few years back, I did one weekly on a test. And one of the students came up and said, how many weeks are in a year? And I thought, my God, what a silly thing. And then before it was over, I had easily, maybe 20 students ask me. There are 52 weeks in a year, for God's sake, okay? Now, the one that's the quirky one, okay, wait. Daily, what would the number be? In fact, no. But maybe, okay? Now, a lot of textbooks just use a 365. The old way it used to be done, they would use a 365 for the exponent, but they would use a 360 for the denominator. 360 days, banker's days in a year. The actual reason was that 360, there's a trick that you can divide any number by 360 really easily. And back before calculators, that's just why they did it. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I can't remember how the book does it, but they say use 360 in both of them, I think. I can't remember, because there are different books say different things. Whatever you have to do to get the answers right, fine. But know that the old school way was 365 and 360. I have found on the computers that are at two banks, they're now using 365 on both of them. They're doing it both places. That's just the way they're doing it now. But anyway, if I crank that out, I would go 20,000 times, and then I open the parentheses, 1 plus 0.12, whoops, wow, 0.12 divided by 4, close the parentheses, and then raise that to the 40th power. $65,240.76. $240.76. We'll pick this up the next time. That's all I have for you. I thank you.